these kinds of ideas, that we have ideas that can be very useful for them. So actually there's a...
First of all, you have to understand what is the basic principle of civilization. What do you want to fulfill? What is the goal, there are different species of life, beginning from aquatics, fishes, and animals in the water. Then as the water dries up, then vegetation comes. In this way, there is evolution from aquatics to vegetable life, then moving insects, reptiles, then gradually birds. From insect, the flies come out, and then flies gradually comes to bird. Then from birds to beast, four-legged. Then from beast to human being. Then human being, the aborigines, uncivilized. Then you come to civilized life, which is generally known as Aryan life. So, the Aryan civilization, Vedic civilization. In this way, we get this human form of life, develop consciousness. Now, we should try to understand what I am. Am I this body or something else? That is the subject matter of inquiry. So where is that department of knowledge?
Where do we fit in? Do you mean, where do we fit in?
Yes.
The organization that I work for, the government that I work for, is of course very, very different, no doubt, to in ideas and in philosophies to all of you and you, for example. We work within, however, a situation where we are concerned that within the framework of Australia's society, which involves people, private enterprise,
people and
increasing
people and
business, private enterprise, industry, increasing population, all of these placing demands on what naturally is Australia, what you were talking about to begin with. The evolution of Australia, the continent, the land mass, the birds, the animals. Of course, we have a magnificent and unique and diverse fauna and flora.
Yeah.
These we must try to protect and preserve for two reasons. Our ideas are that we have to be, to an extent, slaves to the 20th century civilization, or what we call and know as civilization. In other words, our function stops or is frustrated if a government won't give us money to continue our work and our research. So, in other words, we have to direct a large part of our research towards people and making life and opportunities better for people. We can't, however, do that. We can't improve agricultural production. We can't improve forests. We can't improve recreational opportunities in forest lands around cities if we don't consider sympathetically, thoughtfully, and scientifically the natural resources of Australia. So it's interesting that that you mentioned to begin with in the evolution, say, of the evolutionary cycle in Australia, you mentioned the Aborigines. The Aborigines were, in fact, far better at maintaining and conserving the Central Australian landscapes, the Central Australian arid regions, than any Australians since European colonisation. The Aborigines lived in almost perfect harmony with their environment for 30,000 years, 30 to 40,000 recorded years, that's how far our research can take us back, whereas in a little over 100 years, European man in Australia has done, in places, irreparable damage to not only the vegetation, but also the soils of arid Australia. It's damage that will probably never, ever be repaired because in the environment is so delicate in Central Australia that as soon as our cloven-footed animals, our sheep and our cattle, for example, are brought into the arid areas, they eat, they trample, they remove vegetation, this loosens the soil. The soil is very thin, it's very infertile, and it blows away. And virtually all you have left is rock. And nothing grows, of course, on rock. That's an oversimplification, and perhaps an over-dramatisation, but this has happened in Australia. It didn't happen when the Aborigines lived here, undisturbed by us. It has happened since European man has come. In Perth, in this city, around this city, since Europeans have come, we have removed forests, we've cut down trees, we've tilled the soil, we have changed the natural order of things, we have increased the amount of water from rain that flows through the soil. It's getting more and more salty. We are affecting our coastal wetlands, as we call them, the lagoons and the lakes and the marshes, so that they are becoming both more salty and more clogged with silt and soil and debris. Water birds can, in some areas, no longer live there. Fish are dying. A lot of migratory fish and crabs, for example, are no longer migrating to their traditional breeding grounds. So our work, our approach is, and I have to stress that it is scientific and therefore it's long term, and we're only a very young group here in Western Australia, but our approach is to attempt first to understand what has happened, to understand what is happening, and then slowly to be able to suggest ways of improving or halting what is happening, which is bad, and putting forward ideas for what might happen, which is good both for people. We're stuck with that. We're stuck with our urban, whether we like it or not. We're stuck with our urban civilization. We're stuck with our Western way of doing things, unfortunately. But that being the case, we still...
The Aborigines, they're growing that food. The Aborigines...
Oh, no. The Aborigines grew nothing, really. They were nomadic. They were mostly meat-eaters and insect eaters. There are, for example, one of the staples of the Aborigines was a very, very thick and very fat grub called a witchetty grub, which lived in the roots of certain low bushes, and these tear the bush over, and these fat grubs would appear, which would be eaten live, eaten raw,
without cooking.
Yeah. No cooking.
Simply.
No cooking. Immediately. Mm. Wriggling. The fresher the better. They used to eat small furry animals, bandicoots, wombats. There were no rabbits, of course, in those days. Rabbit has been a disaster introduced by man, European man. But they used to occasionally pound the grass seeds from a few species of arid zone grasses make a kind of an unleavened bread from it, which they would then bake. But generally, the Aborigines were nomadic, they were shifting, and they didn't cultivate. They didn't till the soil, ever. But we must, whilst attempting to provide for the inevitable Australian people and the growth of population, we must also try to do that within the confines and the dictates of nature and the natural resources which we have. Australia is very rich in a lot of natural resources. It's very, very poor in others. It is quite poor in water, and of course water is absolutely basic to the growth process. Australia has abundant sunlight, solar energy, which is the basis of photosynthesis.
Vegetable.
But vegetable growth. But we lack water. And in Perth, we are doing an excellent job at ruining our water. It's criminal in many respects what is going on. And this is what we must do. So we are trying to strike a balance between science and research for the benefit of people. But it must be also for the benefit of the environment, because
you find out this was Annad Bhavanti Bhutani. Annad. A-N-N-A-D. Annad.
A-N-N-A-D.
Hello.
Anad bhavanti bhutani parjanyad anasambhava satyagyad bhavati parjanyo jagya kama samudbhavaha. Translation. All living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by the performance of jagya, sacrifice, and jagya is born of prescribed duties.
Parpar.
Purport. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushana, a great commentator on the Bhagavad Gita, writes as follows: Ya indradyanga taya vastitam jagam savishvaram vishnum abhyacha tachisham ashnanti tena adadeha janturam sapandayanti teshanta savishvarasya bhakta savaki vishaya anadikala vibridhaya atmanubhava patibandhakaya nikilai papaya vimuchante. The Supreme Lord, who is known as the Jagya Purusha, or the personal beneficiary of all sacrifices, is the master of all demigods who serve him as the different limbs of the body serve the whole. Demigods like Indra, Chandra, Varuna, etc. are appointed officers who manage material affairs, and the Vedas direct sacrifices to satisfy these demigods so that they may be pleased to supply air, light, and water sufficiently to produce food grains. When Lord Krishna is worshipped, the demigods, who are different limbs of the Lord, are also automatically worshipped. Therefore, there is no separate need to worship the demigods. For this reason, the devotees of the Lord, who are in Krishna consciousness, offer food to Krishna and then eat, a process which nourishes the body spiritually. By such action, not only are past sinful reactions in the body vanquished, but the body becomes immunized to all contamination of material nature. When there is an epidemic disease, an antiseptic vaccine protects a person from the attack of such an epidemic. Similarly, food offered to the Lord Vishnu, food offered to Lord Vishnu and then taken by us makes us sufficiently resistant to material affection, and one who is accustomed to this practice is called a devotee of the Lord. Therefore, a person in Krishna consciousness who eats only food offered to Krishna can counteract all reactions of past material infections, which are impediments to the progress of self-realization. On the other hand, one who does not do so continues to increase the volume of sinful action, and this prepares the next body to resemble hogs and dogs, to suffer the resultant reactions of all sins. The material world is full of contaminations, and one who is immunized by accepting prasadam of the Lord, food offered to Vishnu, is saved from the attack, whereas one who does not do so becomes subjected to contamination. Food grains or vegetables are factually eatables. The human being eats different kinds of food grains, vegetables, fruits, etc. And the animals eat the refuse of the food grains and vegetables, grass, plants, etc. Human beings who are accustomed to eating meat and flesh must also depend on the production of vegetation in order to eat the animals. Therefore, ultimately, we have to depend on the production of the field and not on the production of big factories. The field production is due to sufficient rain from the sky, and such rains are controlled by demigods like Indra, sun, moon, etc., and they are all servants of the Lord. The Lord can be satisfied by sacrifices, therefore, one who cannot perform them will find himself in scarcity. That is the law of nature. Jagya, specifically the Sankirtan Jagya, prescribed for this age, must be therefore performed to save us at least from scarcity of food supply.
Did you follow? So, the only remedy is that we should perform jagga. And this jagga is, in this age, jagga, performance of jagga is very costly. At the present moment, things are not available. So, you should perform yoga. If you don't perform yoga, then nature will restrict supply and put so many impediments. The jagnyat bhavati pajjana. If you regularly perform yoga, then there will be sufficient rainfall. There is sufficient water. It's all round, there is water. There is no scarcity of water. But you cannot touch it without God's intervention. The same water will be converted into cloud and will be distributed on the land. And the water again glide down to the reservoir of water. This is nature's way. But if you do not perform yoga, this machine will not work. To get water from the sea, convert into cloud, and then distribute. This is very restricted.
But we must all perform yoga? We must all perform yoga?
Yes, we have to perform yoga. And that yoga at the present moment is very easy. So, sankirtanai yagai, it is recommended that we have to recognize the authority of the Lord, and in this age, simply by performing sankirtan yoga, he will be satisfied. Sankirtan yoga means to glorify the Lord in so many ways. We glorify the Lord, His form, His activities, His name, His quality. So it is not a difficult job. We can and sit together, family-wise, community-wise, or in office, in factory, we can sit down together and glorify the Lord. This is a very difficult job.
You make it sound very, very simple, of course. And
yes, why don't you accept it?
Well, I, for one, might.
I'm not talking about you.
No, sure, certainly. But imagine the man, as we have to consider, the man, the men, the thousands of them, on their tractors, at their bulldozers, hacking down natural forest.
He says we have to consider the men who are working the machines to take down the forest for agriculture.
Yes, the natural resources.
The point I'm making is that there are so many people in Australia who would have no time. They are too busy making money. They are too busy doing what
and
they
what will do with money. If there is no grain, then will you eat money?
Certainly
that
not.
That is foolishness. That is foolishness. Money is not required. Required food grains.
But unfortunately, of course, increasingly now in our society, there is an increasing ability to produce food almost artificially. And this happens more and more.
Where is the scarcity? Why you are complaining the scarcity of water? Why you are complaining scarcity? If there is enough food, then why you are complaining about scarcity?
Well, I complain because I am a geographer, because I am working with an eye to the future, with an eye to a long-term situation where I can see that...
Your problem and my problem is not different. You are thinking, I'm not thinking, it may be, but you require food grain, I require food grain, the animals require food grain, and everyone requires food grain. So if there is sufficient food grain, then everyone will be happy.
Yes, now, perhaps. How about in 50 years' time, then? How about in 50 or 100 years' time?
But you are complaining of a scarcity of water.
Yes, sure. But also, sorry, I don't mean, and perhaps I didn't explain myself well enough, I do not mean to address myself only to a problem which is here with us right now. Perth, for example, right now, this city, does not have a scarcity. There's plenty of water around. 70%, in fact, of the water which is delivered to domestic homes
gradually,
in Perth every summer is put on gardens to make them green. It's not used for growing vegetables. It's not used for human consumption or human existence, for supporting human life. It's used for making lawns, such as outside this house, for making lawns and trees green so that houses will be attractive and the property values will go up. Once again, it's the money ethic, it's the money situation, it's what our society exists on. It's what makes it all go round. But what I'm worried about is the situation in 100 years' time. There isn't a scarcity now, although the water is becoming less and less acceptable, where by taking down the forests we're letting more water seep into the soil, it's unlocking the salt that's been in the soil for thousands of years and so on. That's our problem. It's long term and it's complex. I'm worried about generations to come. Not now.
If there is rainfall sufficiently, that water is distilled water. Pure water. See, if pure water is distributed all over the country.
It's pure when it hits the ground, but it isn't, unfortunately, when it comes out into the streams.
He says it's pure when the rain comes down, but when it hits the ground, it becomes impure, and then the salt gets in.
That's all right. It is not... rainwater is pure water.
Sure.
So, when it touches the ground, it may become impure. It doesn't matter. But the water is pure. Water is coming. You cannot take water from the sea and moisten the ground. That is not possible. But pure water comes down from the rain. It is utilized.
But a lot of the water that is that in our dams and the water that we use for irrigation south of here, which is the basis for the dairy produce of Perth, is becoming slowly, because of its contact with the ground and its travel through the soil and its seepage out into streams and into underground areas, that water is slowly becoming, in many respects, almost as salty as the sea.
First of all, you want water.
As the sea.
If the water is reserved on the top of the hill, then it gradually comes down. That is nature's God's arrangement. The river fall down, and you can use that water. That is the nature's arrangement. Just like you keep your water on the tank, and by pipe you get down. But there is nature's arrangement. The water is stocked on the top of the hill, and throughout the whole year, the pipe is the river. That water must be there. That is the first problem. Therefore, here it is said, Parjanyata Annasamma. You must have sufficient water. Water is already there, but it has to be purified, kept on the top of the hill, water tank, and it will come down in rivers, then you take and utilize. And when the water falls down, and there is sufficient water, the ground becomes clean, so it is no more polluted.
Do you know how much? It's a very complex thing. Mm-hmm. In the hills outside Perth, there are...
But this is the general plan, that you must have sufficient water. And that water must fall down from the cloud. Not by your system, you pump out water from the sea and utilize. That is...
Sure, we can't do that.
Yes.
We can't do that.
Therefore, you must have pure water. And that water is manufactured or supplied through God's mercy, not your mercy.
No, certainly not, and I wouldn't presume to suggest in any way that that was the case. What our problem is, though, is that because
so
of
that
what,
problem of what, solved, but if you perform sacrifice, that is the verse, annad bhavanti bhutani parjanyat annasambha, and janjat bhavati parjanya jagga karma samudho. Very simple formula. If we follow this formula, that first of all, if we want regular water supply, that we want, not that if we want, we must have regular water supply. So that is possible by performing yoga.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yoga means to satisfy the supreme law. That is yoga. The yoga karma samudbhavam. Karma means your activities. Whatever you are doing, that is karma. You are working as geologist.
Geographer.
Geographer. And another man is working in the factory or somewhere else. Everyone is working. So, by working, the aim should be how to perform yoga. That should be the... Suppose you are a geographer and I am a religious preacher and he is a cultivator, he is a factory man, he is a motor car driver. So that is all right. But if we sit down together and perform yoga, simplify glorifying the Lord, where is the loss in your part or my part or his part? Where is the loss? Suppose, as a geographer, you sit down. As a religious preacher, I sit down. As a motor car driver, he sits down. As a factory worker, he sits down. And perform yoga. Yoga means you chant the holy name of the Lord. Where is the division?
I wish it were as simple as that for the majority of people.
Yeah, everyone. Even the child can take part. Even the child, old man, educated, non-educated, rich man, poor man, worker, everyone can sit down and chant Hare Krishna mantra. So why don't you accept this formula?
How do you know that I haven't?
How about
the people living next door or the people...
They can form
several
groups. You can form your group. Suppose there are 100 gentlemen in this neighborhood. We can sit down. If he has no time, they can sit down with family members. Everyone has got family. Everyone has got his wife, children, or somebody else, servant. Sit down for half an hour and chant Hare Krishna. Very difficult.
No difficulty at all. But it doesn't happen, does it?
You have to introduce. That is our movement.
Sure. Yes, I can see that. But why aren't people doing it? Why aren't more people in Perth, in the city, why aren't more doing it? I'll tell you one reason. And it is because
People should be educated that if you do not perform this yoga, you'll suffer.
But of course there are conflicting educations, aren't there?
What is the wrong there that if we sit down together and chant Hare Krishna mantra without any loss of our factory or war, but if there is some gain, why not try it?
A delightful idea, a beautiful idea, and a very simple sounding idea.
Yeah.
However the Anglicans, the Roman Catholics, who abound in the...
Roman Catholics, we don't say the Roman Catholics cannot perform yoga.
Who can?
We say that you chant the holy name of God. So Roman Catholics, they have God or not? No God.
Well, they think they do a lot of that on a Sunday morning.
And, whatever it may be, any religious system means connection with God, is it not?
Yeah, well, that's what it's supposed to be.
Without God, is there any religion? Any religion, is there any religion who will say, no, we have no God? Is there any religion?
No.
So we are asking, chant the holy name of God. So if you are Roman Catholic...
Any man's God.
Any man's God. God is one. God cannot be two. But we are three.
Roman Catholics don't agree with you in that, do they? Roman Catholics don't agree with you in that. Roman Catholics have their own God. This is one of the problems. It's nowhere near as simple as I'm sure as you suggest, and I wish I
was. It is simple.
The Roman Catholics are a jealous people. Roman Catholics are jealous religious people. They refuse even still to accept, for example, that Anglicans pray in the same way as they do. They refuse to accept that Anglicans pray as well as they do.
No, one thing is that maybe Anglican, maybe Roman Catholics, maybe Christian, maybe Hindu or Muslim or anyone, whether they have God in their conception of religion or not. Do they have God or no God?
Oh, they will have. They must have to be a religion.
So I am asking that you chant the holy name of God.
Oh.
If you have God, you chant the holy name of that God. I don't say that you chant the holy name of my God. You chant the holy name of your God. God is one, just like water. Somebody says water, somebody says pani, somebody says jal. But the end is, the aim is water. Similarly, God, I may say Krishna, you may say Jehovah, the Muslims may say Allah, or others may say something else, but the aim is God.
Well, why aren't we better off then? Because obviously, therefore, going on what you just said, there are a lot of people in Australia every day, perhaps certainly once every week, chanting the name of their God.
Mm.
Why then do we still have problems?
Mm. No, no problem.
Are there not enough people chanting to their God?
Mm.
Or to the one God?
So, problems. Suppose we have but Aborigines, they have God. They have their name of God.
Yes, well, they have multiple gods, yes.
So, if they chant the holy name of God, there is no loss. At least there is no loss.
No, certainly. Oh, no, we've established that, sure.
So why not begin this? There is no loss. You are not losing anything. Suppose if you chant,
Why do we still have problems?
As a your salary is not decreased.
So certainly not. No, but why? But why is there? If people are in their own way, then chanting to their God.
Ultimately, you require sufficient supply of water to grow your food, vegetables. Or even if you are animal eater, to maintain your animals, you require sufficient water. And that is recommended, that Jagnath Bhavati Purcha. And the yoga is very simple, chanting the holy name of the Lord. So why not introduce that every home, every factory, every community, every place, they should sit down at least for half an hour and chant the holy name.
Could I ask you very simply, if you suggest this, if we all do this, will that, for example, remove the problems that we do, that our society in any rate, at any case, generates for ourselves? We have more and more pollution, depending on the way the wind blows, for example. We get, at times, choking pollution from the industrial complexes down to the south of the city.
The next question will be, if you get sufficient grain for eating, why should you take to industry?
To make money, very simply.
What money? Money means you require the necessities of life. So,
but that's not what the multinational corporations that enjoy using Australia's resources are going to say. All of the hills to the east of Perth are almost entirely made up of bauxite, from which, of course, we get, not that the stainless steel, but from which we get aluminium. Aluminium is a very favoured material now. The West Indies are rich in it, and a few other countries, but not many. Australia is now part of, as they call it, part of the bauxite club. And Dr. Cairns, our Deputy Prime Minister and Treasurer, was some months ago talking with a number of people in the West Indies about fixing world prices for bauxite and eventually aluminium. America has Comalco and Alcoa to very large international groups have large interests in the bauxite in the hills around Perth. They are in it to make money. They're in it to return money to their shareholders in America.
There are two ways of living. One way of living is called material enjoyment or sense enjoyment. This is one way of life. In Sanskrit, it is called pravittimar, how to enjoy more. This is called pravittimar. That is going on. The whole, took at the present moment, the whole civilization, throughout the whole world, everyone is trying to get more money.
Mm.
More money means more sense enjoyment. More money means more sense. This is called pravittimar.
Well, maybe less enjoyment, but more possessions.
No, enjoyment in this way of life, more sense enjoyment, will never be able to enjoy our happiness. That is not possible. That is the nature's way. You can close. If you simply want to enjoy, you can enjoy. But you will create more miseries. So this is one way of life. That you enjoy your senses and create more miseries. This is one way of life. And if you want to decrease your miseries, then there is another life which is called simple life. Simple life means you produce your food and you produce your cloth. So you dress yourself nicely, you eat yourself nicely, keep yourself fit and glorify the Lord. This is one way of life. And the other way of life, that we don't care for the Lord, let us enjoy the senses to the topmost capacity and be happy. So this way of life will never make you happy. You simply go on struggling. This is one way of life. The another way of life, that the human life is meant for God reality. That is Vedanta philosophy. Athāta brahma jigyāna. Now, by evolutionary process, we have come to the human form of life. And it is meant for asking, what is my constitutional position? Am I this body or am I something else? The dogs, he cannot put this in play. A dog, he thinks that he is dog, that's all. He's jumping, he's barking, and eating, sleeping, and having sex. That's all. If I ask one dog, please sit down, hear Bhagavad Gita, it is not possible. But you are a human being. If I ask you, Mr. Satan says, sit down, hear from the Bhagavad Gita, you can do that. First of all, we must know the difference between dog and me. The dog is incapable to understand Bhagavad Gita. But human being, just like we are selling this book, in the Western countries, many millions of copies. Because they are human beings. We are not sinning among the cats and dogs. If a human being does not become inquisitive to understand what he is, in which way his progress will be made, then he remains a dog. The dog cannot do it. We have got the capacity, if we neglect this facility and remain like a dog, simply engaged in eating, sleeping, sex and defense, then we remain dog. Then again we become dog. The opportunity was given to us to understand the problems of life, how to solve. If you don't take this opportunity, facility, if we simply remain like dog, then we are next life. That also they do not understand, that there is next life. Do you believe in the next life? You, as a person, do you believe in the next life?
No, I don't.
You do not?
No.
You see? See?
So then, I'm bad material.
Then, no, I don't believe it.
But I will become an old man anyway, in the course of my life. I will become an old man anyway, in the course of my life.
Yes, so therefore that is future life. If you say, I don't believe in it.
Are you talking about reincarnation, life after death?
Yes. Reincarnation, you are already in. Where is your this childhood body? Where is that body?
Here it is. It's grown.
No.
It's grown.
No, it is changed.
It's grown, it's changed, it's evolved. Yeah. I have evolved, just the way, just like evolution, I have evolved to the situations.
Just try to understand. anyway that your boy's body, a childhood body, is no longer. Either you say change or grown, whatever you say, it doesn't matter.
But they're the same bones, the same skin.
But you are the same man, that's the fact. You understand that you are a child or you are a boy, a school boy, jumping. You remember that body. But that body is not existing. That's a fact.
I can't agree.
Why not?
Because
suppose somebody had seen your childhood body and for many years he has not seen you. And all of a sudden comes, suppose your father's friend. So, father today is there. Oh, you are the same. You'll be surprised because he saw you in a childhood body.
But I'm less interested in what someone
is. I still think that you have changed your body. The other man says, oh, you have grown up. Or generally they take it as grown up. But the actual position of the body has changed.
But they're the same bones. They're the same bones. It's the same skin. My face looks
not it is
just
same.
About the same.
Medically, it is not the same.
Well, the functions are different, but it's the same heart that's beating.
It is not the same.
The same veins.
Just like in your childhood, when you were a boy, you had no sex impulse. Now you have got sex impulse. The body of a boy, they cannot understand sex life because the body is different. And now, because you have a different body, you can feel what is sex life. So, it is imperceptibly changing. Therefore, we think that it is growing. But it is changing. It is changing swiftly, just like in the cinema spool. The picture is changing. But because it is changing so swiftly, you are seeing that one man is moving. That is the fact.
Mm-hmm.
There are hundreds and thousands of pictures passed on when you see that this man is taking this teeth and bringing this here. This means there are many pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So similarly, it is like a spool. Your body is changing every moment. That is medical science.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. So, changing. So, you are changing your body. That's a fact. But because you are seeing all in one spool, you are thinking it is growing, it is moving. That's all. But it is changing. This is the science. So, body is changing. And you remember that you had such and such body. Therefore, you are different from the body. This is the science. So unless we understand that I am not this body, I am different from the body, I am changing body, therefore I will have to change this body and accept another. This is the science, beginning of scientific knowledge. Without understanding this fact, his advancement of knowledge is simply for eating, sleeping, sex and defense. That's all. There is no advancement. According to Vedic literature, he remains animal. Saiva gokhara, jasnatu buddhi kunapriti dhatuke sadhik palatra disubhoma ijyadhi jatirtha buddhi sarilena parhichi janesu avignesu saeva gokhar. If we cannot understand ourselves, it is very simple. That I have changed my body so many times. So naturally, when this body will be useless in this life, then I will have to accept another. This is the version of you find out. Dehi nasmin yatha dehi tau manajo gunam jara tatha dihantara prati dhirasattva namayyoti. Did it?
English?
English and
Sanskrit first?
Uh-huh.
Dehi nasmin yatha dehi kumaram jovanam jara Tathadihantara paptir dhirastatrana muyati. Translation. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change.
It's simple. But people have no education. That is the defect of the modern Jews. This is the fact that you are accepting every moment a different body. So after death, you'll have to accept another body. Now, we should know what kind of body I'm going to accept next. That is intelligence. That is civilization.
And do you mean that will allow me, if I come to that realization, that will allow me to then continue to improve my mind, continue to study, to think, to gain knowledge?
Yes, yes.
Beyond, say, the normal 65 or 70 years that I might live in what I imagine to be this body.
The knowledge should be acquired from the beginning of life, from childhood. But if by circumstances I could not get this knowledge from childhood, then we should begin immediately. Because unless we get this knowledge, our life remains imperfect. We remain animal. The animal does not know this. And after evolutionary process, coming to the human form of body, if we keep ourselves in the darkness of animal life, then all this opportunity is lost. This is the first problem. Unfortunately, the modern education is leaders, they have no education, they are thinking just like animal, than this body. Therefore, you are thinking, you are Australian, I am thinking I am Indian, he is thinking I am American, only on this bodily concept. But we are not this body. We are different from this. So, unless we understand this point, our aim of life, our standard of civilization is incorrect.
But I suppose it's very easy to understand and to credit that so many people will be thinking maybe this way, because that's part of the basis of being selfish. And after all, a lot of people, particularly, I would imagine, a lot of Australians, are basically selfish. They are interested far more in what they can get and do for themselves, not necessarily by working hard, by striving, or by reading, or by thinking, or by studying. The old saying, the fast.
The human life is meant for acquiring knowledge, real knowledge.
But so many people don't see it that way.
At least one class of man must be thoroughly conversant, thoroughly aware of the things as they are. They are called Brahmanas. Therefore, society should be divided into four classes. The first class men, who have got full knowledge of life and the problems of life, that they should be the first class men. They may be very few, it doesn't matter. Ideal class. People will learn by their behavior, by their character, by their knowledge. So, must be there. You know. Then the next class would be the administrators. They would be advised by the first class man, and they would administer the state. And the third class man, they should produce food, enough food for the whole population. And the fourth class man would assist these three higher classes, first class, second class, and third. This is the arrangement, nature's arrangement. There are first class men, there are second class men, there are third class men, there are fourth class men. But if you produce simply fourth class men, there cannot be any adjustment. It will be chaotic society. That is the present position. That there is no first class man, there is no second class man, there may be some third class man and all fourth class men. This is the position. Therefore, the whole human society is in chaotic condition. The first class man should understand this. Therefore, it is called dhira sattanamuya. What is the meaning of dhira? This is
sober.
Sober. Gentle.
Mm.
He understands immediately. Because.
But would you. Okay. This the attainment of this first class, which if I understand you correctly, you're saying is very, very necessary for the removal. Yeah, sure. But you're saying that we don't have the first class of man. But
we create.
But
by education you create.
Fine. But how about then the ancient and maybe even now the latter day philosophers.
No, just see.
The men of sobriety and gentleness, the Bertrand Russells, for example.
They have to be trained, just like you have been trained up as geographer. Similarly, right. A certain man can be trained up as first class man by education.
But trained by others or trained by themselves?
No.
Surely training
there must
by
be an institution.
But training by oneself. For example, an Albert Einstein or a Bertrand Russell.
You have become a geographer, not by yourself.
Oh, yes, but we're not talking about me. I mean, I'm nowhere near what you're saying is a first class. I'm talking about our latter day, some of our latter day philosophers. And Bertrand Russell is a person, for example, who, for gentleness, sobriety, and thought, whom I admire very much.
Mm.
And he has attained that himself. He hasn't been, he was certainly, as we all must be, surely, trained to begin with. But then it's a process of individual thought.
Like we have got defined institution. This is for educating engineers. This is for educated medical men. This is for educating geographer. As there are defined departments.
Oh, sure, to begin with. There must be.
Similarly, there must be a department to train first-class men. That is required.
We don't have them in our universities.
So therefore it is chaotic. No first-class man, or third-class, fourth-class.
What are the specifications for your first-class man?
Mm-hmm. Yes, find out. Satta, sama, dama, titikha.
Satta,
sama, dama, titikha, brahma, karma, svabhava.
Satya or Satya?
Satya. S-A-T-Y.
S-A-T-Y.
Satya.
I know approximately.
Satyam, Sautam, Samo, Samo. Brahma, how do you find out? Gyanam, Vigyanam, Asiktam. Gyanam, find out, Gyanam. J-N-A-M, Gyanam.
Gyanam, Vigyanam, Asritam.
Hmm.
Vigyanam, Asritam, 1842.
Yeah.
Samo damas tapa socham kyanti ajavam evacha gyanam vigyanam astikyam brahma kama sambhavajam. Translation. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, wisdom, knowledge, and religiousness. These are the qualities by which the brahmanas work.
This is first class.
Who decides whether a man then is fits into those criteria and becomes a first-class man? Who decides? Who is to say whether a man is first-class or not?
Yes, he should be first-class qualified like this. What is that?
Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, wisdom, knowledge, and religiousness.
But once a man has strived for those qualities, how does he know when he's attained them? And
Sama. First word is Sama. Sama means equilibrium of the mind. One should be trained up in such a way that he is not disturbed in his mind in any circumstance. That is called Sama. And Dhamma means controlling the senses. Naturally, I find one beautiful old man, I want to talk with him and his other's wife, but I should know, why should I talk with other's wife? It is Dhamma, controlling the senses. So, Sama means keeping the mind always equipoised, and Dhamma, the controlling the mind. Now, suppose if I have to eat something to live, so God has given me so many nice foodstuffs, food grain, fruits, milk. You know, why should I kill an animal unnecessarily? For the taste of my tongue.
Selfishness.
But I want to live. There are in near 80% people, they are vegetarian. They are living very nicely. They are eating sufficient food grain and fruits and meal and milk product. God has given us so many. So why should we maintain slaughterhouses, killing other animals? So a first-class man will not do that. First-class man will think that I want to eat something to keep myself fit. Eat my natural products. I can keep myself fit. Why should I kill another animal? And every religion teaches that. Like in your Christian religion, Christ says, thou shalt not kill. And they are maintaining slaughterhouses. So this is the condition of the society, how you can become happy. You are violating the rules and regulations of religion and God. You cannot be there. Nature is disturbed in so many ways. That is nature's business.
But so many of us, of course, are used to it. We like it.
No, I am not talking about you particularly.
General way.
So this is first class man. Sama, Tama, Titikha. Now, suppose I was not a first class man, I was a fourth class man. Now I want to become a first-class man. So I was eating meat that these boys, the European-American boys, they are eating everything. Now they have given up on my word or to associate with me, they have given up meat eating, illicit sex, meat eating. So in the beginning, it may be disturbing because I am habituated to all these things and by my spiritual master order not to do this. So it may be disturbed. And that is called titikha, tolerance. No, I have to do it. If I want to make progress to become first class man, this is order, so I must do it. Even the tolerance, even it is disturbing. In the beginning, it is not disturbing. In the beginning, because I am habituated to do something. Just like a thief, if you ask him to become honest, then it will be disturbing for him. He is habituated to steal. So that we have to tolerate. Therefore it is called titikha. Sama dhamma titikha arjava. Arjava means simple life. Simplicity. That if I can live in this way, why should I acquire so many things for artificial life? That is called arjava. Sama, dhamma, titikha, arjava. Then gyanam. Gyanam means knowledge. That I am not this body. I am spirit soul. mind, actually that is the fact. His body is not important. The living force within the body is important. As soon as the living force goes out of the body, what is the value? He may be a great geographer or scientist or Professor Einstein or whatever. As soon as the living force is gone, you are useless. This body is useless. You have to throw it. That is Jnana. That I am taking so much care of this material body, which will not exist, which shall become dust thou art, dust thou beest. Again, it will mix up with these dirty things. I am taking so much care of this body. What about that living force, which is important? Nobody is taking care. Therefore, they are not in jnana, knowledge. They are in ignorance, just like cats and dogs. This is called jnana. And the vijnana. Vijnana means practical application of the knowledge. That is called vijnana, science, scientific knowledge. There is. Jnana and vijnana, astikam. Astikam means to believe in the authority. That is called astikam. Just like we are speaking about this Bhagavad Gita, because it is spoken by the most supreme authority, Krishna, to believe in the authority. You also believe in authority. But ultimately, in this way, if we acquire this qualification, then you become first Krishna. So anyone can be turned up, just like this boy. They are fourth class, fifth class, and now they are turned up to become first class. But just like anyone can become geographer, anyone can become engineer by proper training.
Do you think you'll make?
We're making progress.
They are young men. Mm. They are all within 30s.
And your aim, all of you, is to become first class men? Mm. Does it matter how long it might take you? Can you become a first class man soon, within 5 years?
Oh, yes.
Should
sufficient. Sufficient. We can make in 1 year.
Really? I wish you would. Well, I hope I won't give you offence if I look at my watch and say that.
Yes, it is a very important matter. If you do not spare time, that is your business.
But I'm afraid my life is one of these selfish lives. It's a life that's dominated by
just natural, just like why first-class men require in society. Mm. Just like in your body, there is first-class part, second-class part, third-class part, and fourth-class part. Just like your head is the first-class part of your body. If your head is cut off, then everything is finished.
Sure.
Similarly, if in the society, if we don't create first-class men, that society is dead. That society is dead. So at the present moment, there is no first-class man, according to this one. Therefore, there is getting pollution, problems, and so on, so on, so on. So unless you create at least a few percentage of the people, first-class men, according to this standard, there cannot be any problem. This is my last word.
Thank you. I wish you all well, and maybe I should think along those lines myself.
Yeah.
It's been most interesting talking to you.
It is necessary to create a class of men, first class, ideal. And if you all create fourth class men, then there can be peace. There is no peace.
Thank you. Excellent talking to you. Thank you very much. And I wish you well in Melbourne.
Yes.
And then in Hawaii?
Yes. Fiji and Hawaii.
Fiji.
You can keep his address.
Yeah.
Here's a sweet we've made from milk.
Yeah, okay. Milk.
Thank you. All right. Good night.
Hare Krishna.